Hi, friends. You are listening to the EntreEd Talk podcast, where we feature amazing educators and entrepreneurs showcasing how you can bring entrepreneurship into the classroom. We believe entrepreneurship is for everyone. I am your host, Toy Hirschman, and I am so glad you chose to join me on this journey. Let's go. All right. Hey, everybody. Hi, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the EntreEd Talk podcast. I, again, am your host, Toy Hirschman, and with me today is an absolutely amazing teacher, Jessica Jess Dreyer from Penn Hills Charter School, and she's going to be one of our presenters. So this is part of our presenter podcast series, and we are hoping to leave you all with lots of cliffhangers and awesome information so that you can come to the conference and learn more and also just engage with EntreEd and all of our amazing educators. So welcome, Jess. And you just heard her school bell because she's actually in school right now. And I'm just so glad that she carved out some time for us. So welcome, Jess. Thank you for coming to the show today.
Thank you for having me.
This is so awesome. So we read your presentation description and were blown away. It has some pieces that are on my heart, but I won't give that away just yet. But why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got to where you are today? Because being in an entrepreneurship focused school and as a STEM teacher, I think you got it made, baby. It's a great place to be. But tell us how you got to where you are, and then we'll talk about your presentation and all other things that we decide to come up with.
This, like you said, this is definitely my dream job at my dream school. It's been about 18 years of education in the making. I was born and raised in California. I was raised by a teacher, so teaching is in my blood, but I'm dyslexic, and so education was really a challenge for me, and that inspired me to want to go into the education field. I always wanted to be a third grade teacher. I honestly never thought I would do technology or science. I, as a kid, and even in college, hated science. So I started teaching second grade in Compton, California, went to fifth and sixth grade in Anaheim, then ended up moving to Pittsburgh and had some time where I stayed at home. And I wanted something in the education field, but I still wanted to be the stay-at-home mom. So I actually got a job at the Carnegie Science Center as a stay-at-home mom. And that's where I fell in love with science at 30.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
It was definitely a roundabout route to finding my life's passion. So I started teaching their coding classes, their technology classes, and just really found I loved science, but I wanted more connection with students. I would have a student for a workshop and never see them again. So I went back, got my science teaching certificate, got my ed tech teaching certificate, and I went into middle school science. And I loved it, but I got frustrated because students kept asking me, when are we ever going to use this? And every teacher has had that question. And I did not have a good answer.
Except maybe PE.
Yeah, exactly. So I just didn't have a good answer. And that's when I started looking at applied sciences and when would they ever use it, which made me start looking at businesses and the real world and entrepreneurial. And I found this amazing school, Penn Hills Charter School of Entrepreneurship. And I sort of kind of stalked their website for a couple of years until they had a STEM opening. And as soon as they had a STEM opening, I applied. And I love being able to take what the students learn in math and science and show them, look at current events, look at the current problems. Where can you use this? We're learning about the water cycle. Look at the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Look at the technology and the robotic ships that are now picking up that pollution. And how could we be a part of that solution? So showing the students, you're learning about this concept, but then what's happening in the real world? What's happening with business? How can you be the next innovators, creators, business creationers? That's not a word. I made it up.
I'm down.
So then, and to show them and inspire them and excite them from elementary on.
Wow, that's incredible. So, okay. So hating science to teaching code. That is one heck of a shift, my friend.
Yes.
That is incredible. And hey, holla, Carnegie Science Center. That's awesome. I live very close to Pittsburgh. We live where our organization is in Maryland, but it's the part of Maryland that's all the way west. So we're directly south of Pittsburgh. So lots of field trips anyway, my kids' school to Carnegie, and I just absolutely love it there. That is incredible. Oh my goodness. And I love that you are a stalker. I also am one of those. So in a nice way. But that's good. That's so strategic. Wow. So I also love that you touched on the idea of where am I going to use this? And as someone who has two tweens, well, one actually teen and a tween in my own home, I hear this all the time. It's not, I wish I had a Penhills. No offense, Garrett County, but I did. But they, it's that relevance piece that like we know where it's applicable. And I was, when I switched careers, I was an algebra teacher, which is the hotbed of where am I going to use this?
Yes,
Great.
it
And I know I can tell you where, but nobody believes me. But it's just interesting when you make that connection, and I think that that's where entrepreneurship lies, at least in my opinion. When you make that connection from, okay, I'm doing this science experiment, I'm doing this coding lesson, I'm doing this whatever it is, even social studies, third grade math, whatever it is, I'm doing this thing. How does it impact somebody in the world? Where does it connect to the world, and where does it connect to something that I get? And I think a lot of that is missing. We just, okay, we're in science now. Okay, science is done. Goodbye. Like that's where what where we're missing the boat, I think, a lot of times.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Well, I want to hear more about what do you think? Well, first, tell us about your presentation at the conference and just a little bit about how you decided to talk about it and what it's going to be about. But don't give any spoilers away.
Okay. So my presentation at the conference is called Creating Innovators for the 21st Century. And so it's twofold. We're going to look at what mindsets are critical for successful entrepreneurship. So, giving them a business background of what is entrepreneurship, how does an entrepreneur think, what mindsets do they need to have? But then bringing in the tech side as the STEM teacher. Okay, your boss says, we need to create an Apple product for this problem. That's the business mindset, but then they need the engineering mindset. So we're going to then look at computational thinking and engineering design, and we're going to look at how easy and seamlessly entrepreneurial mindsets, computational thinking, and engineering design all blend together perfectly. I'll have some hands-on activities that are unplugged. I'll have some hands-on activities that are tech-based, some robotic pieces, and then I'll have some hands-on activities that are based on current events and situations that are happening in our world right now. I'll have some pictures from my classroom, and then I really look forward to hearing brainstorming and talking with the other participants. I think our strongest attribute is when we collaborate and work together and share ideas. So it'll be a lot of hands-on and interaction too.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's your presentation stood out to us so much because it was like, ooh, I'm not for many, many reasons, but for me personally, I was an engineer that then became a teacher that now is doing this entrepreneurship organization. And it's like it's been a really interesting how many things cross over and how many things make sense. How do your students feel when you're talking about these ginormous words? Because I can only spell entrepreneurship half the time. Thank goodness for spell check. But like entrepreneurship and engineering, you're like, hey guys, we're gonna do entrepreneurship and engineering. And they're like, do they look at you like your hair's on fire? What happens?
One of the best things about Penhills Charter School of entrepreneurship being in the title, is the kids are used to hearing that title and they're used to hearing that word. So I don't have that deer in headlights look from my students. teachers who don't teach at an entrepreneurship school, I think an easy crossover would just be like business thinking. And I love bringing it to, okay, how do you think Elon Musk came up with a great idea? How do you think Zuckerberg came up with a great idea? Bring in the names that they always hear, and or even Mr. Beast. How did he come up with his ideas? I know. Like, we have, like, good lessons come when I relate it to their world, but then push them to think outside the box of, okay, you're going to be the next Mr. Beast. You'll be the next Zuckerberg. What problems do we have? What problems did they see? And from a business savvy, smart-minded focus, how did they solve them? And then with computational thinking, I tell them, basically, a computer thinks, but a computer only thinks how the programmer tells the computer to think. So I tell them computational thinking is simply them thinking about their thinking and not expecting a teacher to give them step one, step two, step three. This is where they have to be innovative. They have to be creative. They have to think outside the box. I tell the kids all the time, I don't have the answers, you do. And keep asking questions, you'll keep getting answers. Famous line from Miss Frizzle. And so they, letting them know they need to think about their thinking. They need to think about what problems there are in business and where, like, what products do they want that none of the businesses have? Create it.
Right. I love that. I love that I love that you go to that level of where it's more about empowerment. It's more about students being more self-directed. Is that's something that I know is also very challenging, because traditionally, as we move up the chain in the academic, you know, your academic career, traditionally you get this, okay, learn it, test it, move on, and don't, you know, there's a right answer, there's a wrong answer, that's it. Yeah. And that becomes very stressful when then all of a sudden I'm living in my own house right now, because all of a sudden my youngest is just straight A teacher pleaser. I mean, everything all the time. And he's completely praised for that. And I'm very proud of him, but he's also, when he gets any of these assignments that are like open-ended or more student driven, he freezes and he's worried that he's going to do something wrong. And I've seen a lot of students like this, just, I'll go into schools as like this crazy one-off person now and be like, we're doing this event and we're da, da, da. And even then kids are like, well, but what do I need to do? I'm like, just make this thing go here to that and then do this. And, you know, just make this happen with these materials. And they're like, but how, you know, and it's that empowerment for students to be able to feel like I can try something and it's okay if it doesn't work out perfectly the first time.
It's so interesting that you mentioned that, because I get to teach kinder through eight. Oh, so I get the same students for 9 years, which is amazing. And I've only been at this particular school for 2 years, but I can tell you, when I came here my first year, I definitely got the same responses from my older students, my fifth graders and up. Deer in headlights. What do you mean you're not telling me what to do? You're like, you need to help us. Like, what's the answer? Very much programmed by our traditional education system of being expected of like, here's the answers, now feed them back to me. And that is how our traditional education system programs our students. But that's not going to help them in a career. That's not going to help them once they get a job, because no boss is going to spoon feed, do this, this, and this, and then the students just spit it back. What I found is my kinder first second graders were totally fine with open-ended. So if we can capture these students in kinder and first and second and equip them with these big complex problems and give them this open-ended opportunity, they become comfortable with ambiguity. They become comfortable that failure is actually feedback, and they incorporate it into their next iteration of their next engineering design. And as long as we can equip them from a young age and make that the norm, then they're so much more comfortable by middle school, by high school, and those will be our innovators come college and career.
I know. I love that. I love that. And it's so, I found that as well. When I started teaching, I went upper, middle and high school because I'm afraid of the little guys. They're a lot of work. Not.
I did the same. I started middle school and I've worked my way down.
I did the opposite. I was like, ooh, they don't understand sarcasm. I'm in trouble. But then after working with younger kids, it's so true. They don't have that fear built in yet of I have to get this right or else there's no other, I'm gonna fail this test to be, it's hard for them to process that there might not be a test. It might be some other kind of assessment. And that's hard. I would love for you to speak to that too. How sometimes the reason we don't shift into the kinds of learning that you're doing is because one, we don't know how to assess it. And two, we as teachers, I feel like teachers feel like they lose control. And some teachers are scared, like, oh my, what if I lose control? That's, it's gonna be crazy. Kids are gonna be running around and someone's gonna come observe me and I'm gonna get fired. And
My classroom is very loud all the time. Students are up, standing, talking, getting materials. It is controlled chaos. I have firm expectations that I set of mutual respect, respect for property, respect for others. But my expectations are not minute, they're very general. My expectation is you will have respect for yourself and for the materials. I'm not saying stay seated, stay like only touch your desk. Like my expectations are much more workplace style expectations. And so it is a different classroom management than I had when I taught second grade in Compton. Definitely have evolved and changed much more facilitator than a teacher. I come alongside the students. I ask them questions. I ask them, why isn't this working? What other ideas have you thought of? What other resources or background information can you learn from to get ideas if you're struggling to get started? But the students will give me a hard time that I never tell them anything. All I do is ask them questions. And it's true. I listened to myself one day and I literally said like one sentence all day long and everything else was a question.
That's perfect, though.
So it's like you're right. As a teacher, I have really had to let go of a lot of control. I have to be okay with noise, a lot of noise. I have to trust the students. But what I have found is when I trust and respect the students, they rise to the occasion. And especially my school is predominantly minority, low income. So to get these students into these engineering, STEM, business fields where their economic and their racial background is definitely underrepresented, to empower them, to equip them, to show them that they are in charge of their own destiny and futures, and to show them and give them a space with such equity and justice for them to be able to succeed, it's amazing. Assessment. Oh, that was the other thing you asked. Yes, assessment's hard. Thankfully, PSSAs have not come to STEM. I do a lot of rubrics. All of my assessments are rubric based. And I tell them it's all on a sliding scale. And it's not at the end if their product works or not, doesn't work. A lot of it is how many iterations did they go through? Did each iteration bring some form of improvement? Did they use what didn't work as feedback to improve their design? And so, as long as I can see those evidences of learning and progress, that's what's reflected on the rubric and in assessments. It wouldn't translate to PSSAs.
Well, maybe. I mean, they're actually, I think, word on the street, at least according to a couple of schools that I've been in, is that the Pennsylvania is increasing their entrepreneurship requirements coming like soon. So
Good.
I know I'm excited to see what happens. Because I live so close to Pennsylvania, so we work with a lot of schools in Pennsylvania. Obviously, the conference is in Pittsburgh. But I'm just excited to see what and I'm hoping that Pennsylvania is one of the like forerunners in taking the charge on bringing more entrepreneurs like across the whole, you know, the whole spectrum of grades from pre-K all the way up. I think that that would be absolutely amazing.
I love that.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. This is a thinger. What do you think? So you're STEM, and that's awesome. Like, if I could pick a job, but what about the teacher who is, or like a guidance counselor or a math teacher or whatever you have, you know, eighth or sixth grade social studies, you know, how could that teacher in your mind incorporate some of this stuff? And they probably do at Penn Hills, but how could they incorporate some of this stuff without leaving their curriculum? Because a lot of times we work with that. That's what we try to do. And we work with teachers who generally go, you know, I can't do anything else because I'm already behind in my content and meeting my requirements and blah, 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 blah. So just wondering how you feel about that and how Penn Hills in general feels about that.
Well, before I came to this school, I was a middle school science teacher for 5 years. And so I got to do some of that with middle school science. One of the things I did was the straw rocket experiment when we talked about Newton's laws of motion. So totally standards based, Newton's laws of motion. It was in our textbook, in our curriculum. But instead of teaching it from the textbook, I made it hands-on. NASA had a free resource for the straw rockets. You can literally just Google NASA straw rockets and it comes up with a PDF. And I said, okay, knowing Newton's laws of motion, apply them. How are you going to get force? How are you going to change a projectile? What is equal opposite? How are you going to affect the trajectory? Do you want more propellers? Do you want more fins? Do you want a longer body, shorter body? So right there, you can take any standard in science. I mean, science is my area of expertise. But any of the standards I had, I then tried to take it out of the textbook and into some sort of criteria, constraint, experimentation, and then would talk with them of, okay, if you worked for Boeing, what do you think you would do using Newton's laws of motion to make a better airplane, to make a more fuel efficient airplane right now, to fix some of the issues with the door plug? I listen to news, not because I really care about the news, but I listen to news because it is my inspiration for tying into any of our curriculum standards. Even with meiosis and mitosis and talking about cellular reproduction and how cells duplicate, I brought that into our cancer treatment and I had them research some of the cancer treatments and how it, like, where it applied to it. So whatever the standards were in a regular science class or even a regular math, I tried to make a real world connection, because the kids don't care about it if it's in a textbook,
right?
They only care about it when they see it actually happening in their world. And I had taught meiosis and mitosis for 2 years and it bored me to death. And when I started, I actually finally collaborated with one of the hospitals here in Pittsburgh, and I had a doctor come and talk with the kids, and then they took that content and applied it to cancer. Then one of the kids was like, hey, my grandma just got diagnosed with cancer. So then it became real. And that's what, no matter what our subject matter is, we as teachers have to be modeling that innovation of, okay, this is in the textbook, let's innovate it. Let's create it to be applicable and current and present to whatever is happening in the world. And if we can't do that for our students, how could we expect our students to do that?
Yeah, I love that. That's so true. And it seems like a simple thing, but it's not. We just have been kind of missing it for so long that we can't give them information. They have it in their pocket. So true. You know, so mitosis, we can tell them what it is, but that's not the source of information anymore. They can find that any, you know, Google search or whatever, or ChatGPT, but, you know, it's being able to show them how it applies and then show them how to use it in the world. And that's what makes it, I mean, you know, that's what makes it real. Yeah. You can actually apply what you've absorbed. How many things have, at least personally, how many things have I been to school with that was, whoop, got the grade, got out, you know, couldn't tell you one stinking thing about it.
One of the interesting quotes, I was just doing some research from ISTE, was like, when we were in school, they were training us to be a career that existed. Like, oh, my dad was a teacher, I became a teacher. My mom was a nurse, my sister became a nurse. they were saying 65% of our students will go into fields that are not even currently in existence. We can't teach our students, what they can find on their phone. Then we're pointless. They have a phone for that. They don't need us. We have to teach our students how to go to the next step.
Yep. And that's, I'm so glad you said that, because we talk about that at Entre Ed all the time about how we have no idea what we're preparing these kids for. We don't even know what the words are, right? Like, we don't even know what the first word of the name of the field is. And to prepare them, we can't prepare them with a set of technical skills that we don't know, but we can prepare them with what the skills are that they will need to navigate all the uncertainty and the differences, and how you're, certainly they're going to need to shift their career 20 times. We shift our career several times, and it's just becoming more and more prevalent that they'll be okay, maybe completely different. Well, like you and I, like wildly different fields, but they all kind of converge. And so that is amazing. Well, I am going to start to wrap it up. I could talk to you all day. I promised we'd keep these at around a half an hour. So, but Jessica, this has just been so awesome. And I'm so thankful that you joined me today. And I am so excited to see your presentation IRL. This is going to be a really cool conference. I'm so excited about it. And also, as the first one as the head of this organization that I've set up myself. So I'm excited and nervous, but I mean, the speakers that we have, you included, obviously have just blown my mind. I'm so thankful and can't wait to see everything. And I hope everybody joins us for the conference. But thank you so much. And I'm look forward to continued talking with you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. And I love your choice board. By the way, y'all, you can't see it. She's got this choice board, which I'm only assuming is like what students can pick. It looks awesome.
Yeah, it's a choice board for either fast finishers or people who just need some more inspiration or just need a brain break. So they can go to the library where I have a lot of resource background books, like it was logic puzzles, logic games, board games, task cards, engineering challenges. So just a lot more free choice options.
I love it. I love it. Well, I am looking forward to seeing you at the conference, and I hope you have a great, it's a Friday, so I hope you have an absolutely wonderful weekend. Thank you so much for joining me again, Jess.
Thank you.